Episode 88 here of the Cherokee Rewind. We thank you for tuning in. I am Mick. Of course, you know that. My guest this time around, this is a guy who I got to know back in the early 2000s. Seems like a doesn't seem that long ago. And then you look back and realize, oh my gosh, it is a long time ago. But this guy has had quite a journey. I still remember him as a goaltender, and we all know how I feel about goalies, and he tends to prove it very much. Goalies. Anyway, a really good guy though, truthfully speaking. I remember him and his father both. They were both really, really good people. And even back then, when you expect a junior kid to be exactly that, and he wasn't. He just, like I say, is just a really standout guy, good guy, and it just him and his dad, I always talked to before or after every game, and just shot the poop, and we always had a great time back then. And I hadn't talked to him since then, so this is a treat for me too, finding out what's going on with him. His name's Ryan Wysocki. And we always call them socks. So if you hear me refer to it, that's just the way I did it. But anyway, socks, good to see you, bud, and talk to you. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Mick. Appreciate you having me on here, and it's been a long time coming here, but getting a chance to catch up with your face and with the organization a little bit. Obviously, just a kid when I got there, so I'd like to think I've changed a little bit and grown, but at the same time, hopefully, kept the good traits going. So there's a lot of good people in Toledo, and it definitely helped shape me, and it continues to help shape a lot of kids coming in,
Yeah,
kind
no
of figuring
kidding.
their lives out, figuring hockey out.
Yep, that's what it's about. So let's get started here talking about you. And did you come out of the womb ready to lace them up, or how old were you when you decided, I might give this hockey thing a try?
I don't know if I had much of a choice on my own. Hockey was kind of in the blood. Dad and stepdad both played and grew up, and they loved the game. And man, I want to say I started organized hockey maybe as a second year mini mite, so just a little tyke at the time, and became a full-time goaltender by my first year of squirts. So that's what, eight maybe, something like that, just
Okay.
offhand. So I mean, it was in my blood. I had no choice, and luckily I fell for it to as much, if not more, than those guys. So followed right in
Perfect.
their footsteps.
Very good. Now, who did you grow up as far as favorite players go, favorite teams, that kind of stuff?
Oh man, I think I can share this with a lot of the Cherokee family, but definitely a Red Wings guy, no doubt about it. I would say my player growing up was for sure Steve Yzerman. And just about anybody that wasn't a an Avalanche member, but that's a story for another time. In terms of goaltender, I know as a kid I was a huge Martin Brodeur fan. I had Brodeur memorabilia and jerseys and plaques all littered across our downstairs like basement playroom, and he was my guy growing up, no doubt about it.
Well, I know you're now a resident of the Queen City, but where did you grow up originally?
Yeah, so it's been a busy little year here for me, so I'm not in the Queen City anymore, but we'll get to that. So I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh,
That's
okay.
where I'm back to right now. Grew up here, played 4 years of high school at my local high school. Found my way to Toledo for 2 years, and was fortunate enough that that led me to Fitchburg State University in Massachusetts. I played 4 years of NCAA D3 out there.
Okay.
That after graduating led to a job, and again, fortunate enough to stay in hockey, and went the professional hockey route. So I've been with I was with the Carolina Hurricanes organization the last 4 years, and
Okay.
my contract is now up, but that's why I was living in Charlotte for 3 years. and Chicago last year when their affiliation changed. So I was with the Chicago Wolves last season. Yeah.
Wow, okay. Well, we'll talk about all that here as we go, but let's backtrack here for a second. Do you remember like some of the like when you were a little guy, some coming up through the ranks, some of the teams you played for, and who were some of the coaches you played for?
All right. So as a little guy, I grew up actually in a Kentwood like youth hockey program. When I was coming up, Kentwood had a pretty close to elite, if not elite, high school program. They were really the only Michigan high school program from the west side of the state that could compete with Detroit Catholic Central and Novi and all those big time schools. So Kentwood was kind of the place to be. Had a lot of family friends at the time. And then I want to say it was, oh man, you're testing me here, Mick. Maybe right around 14 years old that I broke off, played for it was Graha at the time. It was like the miniature Grand Rapids Griffins team. I'm not even sure if it still exists as a youth program, but we were there for a couple years and then played for Granville High School.
Okay. So, but who are some of the, do you remember any of the coaches that you played for?
Sure. Somebody who had a huge effect on me, not just as a player, but as a person, was Mike Binsky. He was with Granville High School for a couple of years. Most recently, I think he was with Grand Rapids Catholic Central,
Okay.
either as a head coach or an assistant coach, but he was fantastic. Really just really a person development kind of coach rather than, X's and O's guys. And I mean, if that's the kind of guy you're going to find in high school, that's about perfect for you, So, not every youth athlete has had that experience. And I was fortunate enough to deal with Mike and befriend Mike and our families, I've been pretty close since.
Okay. Now, do you remember anything about when you first started playing goalie full time? Was it a rough adjustment? Do you remember if it was or was it just exciting and fun and you couldn't wait to, because it was you that was stopping that puck?
I'm already smiling during your question here. I've got that was exactly my reaction to it. That second part of what you were saying. I said it was squirt A, so first year squirts. The coach was Tim Sullivan at the time. He said, "Hey, we need a full-time goalie. I know you liked playing in net a couple times last year. We'll still, let you play out a couple tournaments, but we want a goalie." And I said, 100%, yes, absolutely. And gung ho, I said, "I'm gonna play. That's me." I said, "Dad, can we go get pads? Can we go get a stick? Can we get a helmet?" And he's like, "Uh-oh, here we go, right? Like this is here it goes. This is gonna be an issue moving forward." And
Break out the wallet.
yeah, I mean, ne yeah, exactly. Never looked back. Get the credit card out. Leave it on file from that day forward. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. So, do you remember do you remember what did you take to it pretty quickly, or did you have to work at it pretty good?
A mixture of both. I mean, I think naturally it came to me pretty easily, but then I think acquiring skills and learning the position to become better is definitely like you can't just do that by guesswork. So, yeah, I mean, initially, yeah, I just got in the way of the puck, and I guess you kind of try to be an athlete, right? You play enough mini sticks downstairs with with the brother or friends that it's like, all right, I'll be goalie, and you'll learn how to stop it and get in the way. But like I said, in terms of building a skill set and learning the game, yeah, it takes a little bit of time.
And realizing that a puck, when it's fired at you, hurts a lot. It has a lot more impact than that ball you did with mini sticks.
Right. You learn to add protective wear after every terrible bruise and piece of equipment missed.
Now, let me ask you, when you played mini sticks with your brother and stuff, You ever drop the mitts with them and go at it?
I think that's how every single session of Mini Sticks ended in this house. Oh,
Oh, yep.
he was.
I'm not saying you're unique to that because you're not, not even
No,
close.
no. I
Oh.
think that's part of it, right? That's you learn to toughen up real quick. It's good old sibling love and banter right there. I said it was somebody would throw too hard of a check into the wall that has no give, and next thing you know, the parents are slamming the brooms against the floor. Hey, so it was a blast. They have to come run down and get us, or one of us would come storming upstairs throwing stuff.
That is awesome. I love that. But now, when you started, how old were you when you played travel?
Oh, more elite level, probably 12 already.
Now,
I mean, played a few years of like house level, learn the game, and then it became kind of a pretty competitive level at that point, I'd say.
okay. Now, what was it like as far as for you, your first chance to hit the road and realize that, wow, this is pretty cool, man. We get to go to different towns. And of course, the downside of that being that you also had to learn to adjust sometimes having to do homework on the road, getting in late from road trips. What was that, all that like, that, if you remember?
Yeah, I mean, I think every kid takes it for granted, and it sounds pretty cliche, but at some point you got to self-reflect and just thank mom, dad, in my case, mom, dad, and stepdad for from our neck of the woods here in West Michigan. If you want to go somewhere with hockey, you're going to end up playing on the east side of the state a lot. Obviously, with all the travel programs and elite programs that are in the greater Detroit area. So you take for granted all those trips. It's pretty much every weekend, and you've got weekday trips, in my case, out to Lansing or Flint, Port Huron, and on the weekends it's Detroit, Ohio, Indiana, Chicago, maybe even Canada if you're fortunate enough for a few, tournaments. So you don't necessarily appreciate it at the time. You do, but you realize it after the fact, like the sacrifices that they made. And it was really cool at the time, and it's kind of cool that you didn't appreciate it enough because you were almost more in the moment at the time, which is as exciting as a kid. You're just playing hockey. You show up and it may be a rink you've been to a year ago, and you're like, oh, look at this, this changed. Or better yet, it's a place you've never been, and you walk in for the first time and you're like, holy smokes, this place is awesome. But then by the time you get your equipment on and some podunk, smelly locker room, you get your equipment on, and it's just another day playing hockey, which is the best part of it, right? That's why we all love it. So.
That's true. Now, of course, and you appreciate it then. But you also appreciated probably about as equally as when they would get you in the car afterwards and run you through the drive-through at McDonald's and get you a meal.
Yeah.
They were about on par back then. But now
Right, right.
it doesn't change until later. But
Right. And then you get your food in you, and you finally fall asleep, and they're checking every 2 seconds until you're asleep so that they complain about the game. That's part of being a parent, right? It's you're just waiting to complain about the refs, the coach, the teammates,
the other parents, whatever.
the other parents, exactly. Yeah, the fight in the stands. You're right.
Yes. That's what I love about amateur hockey. Anyway,
So good.
yes. So now, you said you then made the jump to high school. Talk about what that was like as far as playing those 4 years.
Sure. High school hockey was definitely still booming in my area at the time. I think there was a little bit of a almost a switch over from, like I said, East Kentwood High School was kind of the place to be and the school to look at the time. When I got there, I think the skill level around the area had increased. So there were four or five, pretty good power schools at the time, and it felt like we were always chasing them. When I made the jump as a freshman, I did make the team as a freshman goalie. And man, I look back at those pictures. I have no idea what that coach was thinking at the time. I was this little 5'3½" goaltender. At the time, we had what was it? It was Tim Muldoon was a defenseman, senior defenseman. He was 6'8".
Oh my God.
6'8". He was our football team's tight end. Sorry, my dogs are gonna start barking.
That's all right, no worries.
But he was our tight end that year. So imagine that on skates, right? You've got Zdeno Chara shooting on you, and you're barely a look over the crossbar. So it was pretty funny. I'm just this little guy out there, and I looked every bit of a little guy. So I guess you learn quick at that point.
Hey, learn or die trying.
Right. Everybody was so big. I remember that year. I'm going, man, the hockey's about the same, but everybody can shoot it. Everybody's huge. I can't see around them. The screens are so much harder.
Yep.
But
And so, I mean, tell me about that. Like, do you remember your first year? Did you get to play much, or did you start?
I did not start. I remember my first game, I got scored on. I think it was about 25 seconds after I came in for the third period to play the rest of the game. It was at East Kentwood against East Kentwood, and it was the kid that was in the runnings for Mr. Hockey in the state of Michigan on a breakaway from the far blue line.
Oh
So I
boy.
didn't have much of a chance,
I guess not.
but it was pretty funny. The second he got the puck, I'm going, "Oh, come on. Come on here." Can't we start off with like maybe a dump in, a
Dump and
long
chase.
shot from the blue line when he's changing? Exactly.
Ice
So
the
no,
puck,
that was
damn
pretty funny.
it.
Right. Help me out here. Yeah, I'm just a child.
Oh man. So you had I take it the team had some struggles that first year you played.
Yes and no. I would say I had some struggles adjusting just because everybody was so much bigger and I didn't play a lot, which, that was the first time that that had occurred in my, youth hockey career, not playing a lot. But the team itself was actually really skilled that year, and the senior goaltender was pretty darn good at the time too. So I think the team did pretty well. And then there was, oh man, there was a big turnover after that first season, just from guys graduating and kind of a scramble for players coming in, and kind of everything changed from there on out. But
Okay, well, let's talk about that. You go on, you play, as you went on in your high school career, when did you finally assume the mantle?
I split time with a co-goalie and friend sophomore year, and then really kind of took over junior and senior year, which is funny looking back because that's almost exactly how things worked in college for me too. So it was yeah, it was I'd say really took over junior year.
How were those teams? How'd you?
Pretty good. We had a really good senior year actually.
Playoffs?
Yes, lost in regionals. Sore subject,
Yeah,
still is one of those teams you shouldn't have lost to, and it's just how it worked. We were kind of, shame on us, but looking forward to that next team, almost looking past the underdog in the regional finals, and sort of preparing already for that big trip to Marquette to play the powerhouse team that they had my senior year.
wow. Now,
Isn't that how it always works?
yeah, true. Now, was there do, excuse me, was there any opportunity, or was there any interest in you maybe leaving high school to go play somewhere else for travel, whether it be, midget?
It's a good question. I think At the time, I guess I just didn't really see it as an option, right? I didn't really see even junior hockey as an option until really the tail end of my senior year in high school. Knowing what we know now in youth hockey and almost mid youth, right? Like that high school midget age for players, 4 years of high school can be a lot sometimes and almost hold you back, right? From the next level. But from a education standpoint and being in school and being at home, it wasn't really an option for me. Never really put much thought towards it even. Finally, like I said, the latter half of my senior year is when the goaltending coach at the time, Joe Messina, who still kind of runs the greater West Michigan area in terms of goaltending coaching and consulting, he kind of said, "Hey, you're pretty good. You could take a run at this if you want." So it was, I guess, almost an eye-opening, conversation because, like I said, I never really thought about it, right? So it was kind of cool, right? Going like, "Oh, okay. How does that work?" Right? It familiarized me because I know nothing.
Well,
So,
now, did you have any goaltend coaching, specific goaltender coaching
like
while
go
you were growing up?
yes yeah I'd say most of my time in high school was all with Joe Messina or Joe Messina and Stan Matuif. That's Bandits goaltending. Stan's basically the east side of the state or Detroit area, but yeah, I spent a lot of time with Joe one-on-ones. Once I kind of realized I had a shot or once I wanted to kind of elevate my game at those 2 senior years. So a lot of one-on-ones with him, and then he actually signed on with Granville as well to come to a couple of practices a week. And then as far as I know now, he does that with just about every team in West Michigan. Bounces around rink to rink and kind of helps out for practices and tries to watch games and give you a couple notes here and there. But yeah, it's a pretty impossible position to get by without goaltender specific coaching at an elite level at least.
Okay, so as far as how far did you get in the playoffs for? I mean, we talked about your senior year. How about your junior? What was the farthest you got? Well, I guess I should ask for any of the 4 years. What was the farthest you got in the playoffs?
Oh, you're hitting me with the big stuff now. Throw the dagger in and twist it. I think that was it. I want to say that we never actually got past our regionals, which
Okay.
is incredible because since then Granville's put themselves on the map and they've been in the state finals pretty, or not the finals, but the state tournament pretty much every year. So yeah, I think that was our best chance. I want to say we were 23 or 4 in like 2 or 3 that season, so a really successful regular season. Went in, upset East Kentwood in the first round, and then like I said, things happened for a reason, but that was pretty much it. Just never really got over that hump there.
Well, I look at it. I would look at it this way. I mean, that's just me, just listening, because I don't pump you for information before we record this or anything. This is all straight up, and I guess the way I would look at it is, you guys were the bridge. You're the bridge to what they are enjoying now, the success they're enjoying now. Someone had to go in there and bridge that gap, and that was you guys. So
I like that. I like that.
take that for what it's worth. It's true. Not every t I mean not every team is going to win every state title every year. Okay, sometimes you've got to be the bridge to future success, and that was your role. I mean,
Sure.
would
I
you
like
rather
that.
do that? Would you rather do that, or would you rather finish 2-23? Okay,
Right,
that's
right.
the way to look at it, So at least I
That's a
hope
good
it is,
point.
So and
Right.
yeah, you can joke about it and still say, yeah, it hurts, and that's fine. I mean, that's because it does, That's the one thing I told somebody else once. About I said, I don't let losing consume me, but I try to learn from it. And the number one thing I learned
Sure.
from it is that I don't like it. I didn't like it very much, you know? So
No.
yeah, I'm gonna work hard and try to win, but you know, if I don't always succeed at that, I'm not gonna let it consume me. My
Sure.
life's
Well,
too short for that.
I would concur with that. I think that realistically losing like that quite possibly could have driven me to want to play juniors and ended up at Toledo, and then losing there could have driven me internally to keep going. And that's they said I ended up playing NCAA D3 hockey, and that's it very well could have been driven by some of those early exits, right?
I mean, there's always a reason for everything, and learning that I think probably will help you as you go, not only in hockey but in life, you know. So, but now
Sure.
let's get to some of the stuff that I would say probably going to be an interesting ride, and that is
Oh.
how did you end up going from high school to Toledo?
All right.
There were no
So,
stops in between, were there?
no, there were not. Obviously, went through the process of a few different, like Michigan high school, elite camps, what have you. Some of them are good, some of them weren't as good. But you try to go to these prospect camps and get your name out there where there might be a couple scouts, or might be 10 scouts, or might be nobody, a few dads up in the stands. But lucky enough that got invited down to Toledo for their tryout. And, at the time it was Ian Duncan brought me on, and it was good. I mean, they said it was a learning experience, and you kind of figure out real quick it's just a different level, different mentality. At the time, I didn't try to balance any school with it or take any classes, but I know a lot of guys do, right? Some of them are younger. A lot of the guys from the Toledo area or Detroit area, they're still taking high school classes while they're playing. Others, they've graduated and they're already taking, their electives in college, and that's to that I commend that, because it was a lot already for me to, pick up a different lifestyle, let alone have that stressor on it on top of it.
Now, I mean, what about the high school or the junior level? When you were in the ice house there, what was it like to walk in that locker room? Did you feel any intimidation at all?
You definitely did. Some of the older guys. I mean, is the experience similar to my freshman year where I showed up in high school and there's guys that are 3 years older than me? For sure, it's very similar. But you saw those guys at school all the time, and they would kind of help out as upperclassmen. Whereas junior hockey, it's not. I don't want to come off as like it's this big, like almost hazing experience. It's more of like a the comfort factor may not have been there, right? Like they're older, they've got their own agenda, and they already have plans for next year. They're done, they're going here, or they're going there, or they're retiring, so they don't necessarily don't care. It sounds a little harsh, but that's just sort of how it felt for me. Was you've got some of the older guys doing their thing, and then here I am with maybe two or three other guys, and we're just kids trying to figure it out.
Now, was there anybody in that camp that you knew, like from playing up in Michigan and playing over in Detroit and that kind of stuff?
Okay, thank you. I really don't think there were at all. I think there were a few guys maybe I ran into at tryouts. I mean, I over my 2.5 years of attending various tryouts and at different junior levels, you kind of you make friendly faces or played on or against guys at different camps, but I don't think there were any necessarily like close names that I knew going down to Toledo.
And then besides, as years go on, they all kind of run together. But
All of them,
now I'm trying to remember socks. Did you wear num when you played in Toledo, did you wear number 31 or was it 30?
Oh man, I'm trying to. I would have had to be 35. That's been
35,
my
yep.
number. That's been
Okay.
my number all the way through, except for my freshman year in college. It was not available, so I took Dirty 30.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, you're telling me. Big oof. I was sighing when I had to take that number.
Yowza.
No, I've always been a 35 guy.
Okay. Well, that's fine. And I try to remember. That's what I do with these also when I'm on here. Usually right at the get-go of a podcast, I'll try to remember the jersey number you wore. And I held off because I was trying to remember. I was going back and forth. I could not remember what jersey you wore. And now I
It was a
found it.
while back.
Yeah, just a little. But yeah,
Yeah.
35 she is. So now,
Yeah.
when do you remember who was your in your first year in Toledo? Who was your goaltending partner?
Oh, man. I can't think of his name. I can see his face and his equipment, which is that's about standard for every goalie ever. Because I know he got traded at the end of the year.
Was
And his
that,
nickname was Duck. Was it was
yeah,
Ducky. His
Brian
nickname was
Duck.
Duck.
It was Duck. It was
Brian.
Brian Danzak.
That was it. Yeah, Brian Danzak, and then that would have been so him and was it Boots Panetta or
Yeah, Boots,
no B Boots
Aaron
that's a different
Bootmiller.
kid. That's what it was. Boot Miller. Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you remember
So
the
many names
nicknames. I'll
running
put
around
the,
and
I can remember the name
I
then.
love that out of you. What a team. That's teamwork.
Yes, it is. But Duck was I love Duck, man. He was a great kid. I always got along with him back then. Same thing with Aaron Bootenmiller. Boots was a he was a different kettle of fish, but by God, he was a good guy. You know, and he could
Yeah.
play.
Yeah.
He could play.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the nice thing about back then. Toledo had some pretty darn good goaltenders. You
Yeah.
know, and now did you? Were you the backup most of the first year, or did you? When did I
It
mean?
was this, yeah, my first year, we'll chalk that up as learning experience. I'm sure Ian Duncan would say the same. I think that it was a fair rotation and each guy had a chance to take the net. And I'll just be honest, I don't think any of us took the net. You know, it was like, hey, we're all pretty good and we know we can play, but the second that he gave us an opportunity to run with it, I think all three of us crumbled every time. So, that's why I think Duck was traded there like I don't know halfway through the season kind of to just open space, and I think that was Coach Duncan's attempt to get one of us to play better, right? Kind of relax, find your net and let it go. And like I said, I think I just pretty much struggled most of that first year. I don't know if it was necessarily learning the game or what, but it was just different.
Well, I think also too the fact that Duck, I think he was aging out that was his age out year.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
so I think, you know, just the idea of that you guys were a couple of young bucks, you
Yeah.
were able, you know, I think he wanted to see what he had. So,
Yeah.
you know, being able to do that, giving Duck a chance to go somewhere and play full time. I think he got traded back over to Cleveland, maybe. I can't remember.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
But anyway, the did you and Boots get along pretty good in that first year?
Okay. I think like any you get one of two working relationships with your goalie partners through the years. Either you end up best friends or it was just okay and things were fine and you cheer them on when they play and move on. You know, I think that was pretty much our relationship. I haven't talked to him since, you know. And then I've got other goaltending partners that, like I said, they're best friends and still buddies. So it was fine. I think that's about it, right?
Yeah. So, you know, and that first year too, there was a lot of there was a big learning curve there, not only just for you and Boots, but I think for that whole team in general. You know, just it was interesting. Who are some of the guys that played in front of you that you remember?
There are so many guys. Let me try and just remember a few here. Kid from Florida.
That Ryan Wall or Lucas Kelsey?
Nope, Lucas Kelsey. That was the one. Lucas Kelsey. There was a There's a big boy, a fighter from Texas,
Oh, Chase Michaels.
Chase,
Yep.
Chaz Michael Michaels, that's the guy. And then let's see, Lucas Cook, is that right?
No,
Matt Cook.
Matt Cook.
Matt Cook.
Yeah, I always
Matt
remember because
Cook.
I can never think of Matt Cook without thinking of Spencer Jordan.
Yep, Matt
Because they were
Cook,
both there.
Matty Ock.
Frank the Tank, yep.
Frank the Tank. Let's see, who was a big defenseman we had, fantastic beard, and he's now he's a caddy now on the LPGA, or
Josh
was.
Williams.
Bingo, Josh Williams.
Willie, we call him.
And I lived in a billet house with Sean Sarapelia.
Oh my. Oh
Yep,
yeah.
good old good Sean.
Yeah,
Yep.
he's coaching now. He went into
Yes.
he got into MMA for a bit, and now he's
Yep.
coaching hockey. He's coaching the little
Yep.
guy, younger guys. So I do know that, and here locally. So,
Oh, really? Okay. Nice.
yeah, because he was originally, I think, just not too far from here.
Yes. Yeah. He was, when I met him, he was, I believe, a Royal Oak guy. And then, instead of driving down each day, he just, part of junior hockey, wanted to live in a billet. So we lived just right across the state line there. Shoot, probably 2 miles from the ice house or whatever,
In the rink.
right? So,
Now, what
yeah.
who did you billet with?
Oh man, it was Scott, and oh man, she would be so upset.
The
Scott and Connie Schneider.
Snyders, okay. There you
Scott and
go.
Connie Schneider. Yep.
Yep. Things go okay there as far as, the relationship.
Oh, fantastic. So good. They were the best. They were the absolute best. If I'm driving through Toledo tomorrow, I could still go knock on the door. Wouldn't even have to knock. It's probably open. Just walk right in, sit down,
That's
have a beer with Scott. That's
funny. That's funny.
yeah.
Oh,
And
man.
then all of my first year, their son, who was, I want to say he was 2 years older than me. And he played hockey, but not for Toledo. He played in what's just south of Toledo. It's almost to Bowling Green.
Like Perrysburg. There's Perrysburg, there's Anthony Wayne,
Man.
there's Lake, there is
When I come up with it, I would know, but he played
Maumee.
down there. Nope.
Huh.
It doesn't matter,
Sylvania.
but
Well, there's Sylvania. There's Sylvania Northview and Sylvania Southview.
oh
There's
man.
also St. John's or St. Francis.
Gosh, I want to look it up. I need my friend Google on that one, but no, that helped me the most, probably, was just having somebody roughly my age, a couple years younger or a couple years older, just sort of helping out, showing it just how it is, right? So no, they were fantastic. That was best case scenario, was living with the Snyders, 100%.
Okay. So now, I mean, and you got along pretty good with Sean?
Oh yeah, fantastic. He if I look back and I really think about it, I would say his like passion at the time for working out and training at that gym that we had access to. I don't know if the Toledo Cherokee still do, because don't you guys have a facility kind of in your rink now, right?
They have a workout
Yeah.
station in the rink.
Yeah. So if you recall, when I was there, we used to go down the street,
21st
down
Century Health
Alexis
Club.
Road over to 24. Yep, that was it. And the beauty of that is we could go there for as long as we wanted. And Sean and I would go over there, we'd get through our team workout. And who was the assistant coach at the time?
With Dunk Chris Tarsha.
Yes, it was Tarsh. It was always myself, Sean, and Coach Tarsha still in the gym 2 hours after the team workout ended. And then we'd get home, and Connie Schneider would just have dinner, sit out. It was, you know what? Junior hockey was not that hard.
Wow.
It was, But if I think about it, I mean, John's passion for the gym wore off on me, and that's when I kind of started training. And you look at me now, I'm a strength conditioning coach. At the time, I thought I wanted to be an engineer. I couldn't imagine sitting in front of a computer and being in an office now. That's not what I do at all. Now I'm on my feet all day long and I love it. But I don't know if that would have ever occurred to me if it weren't for kind of falling in love with the gym with Sean all the time, right? So
Hey, we all have those people that help us get to where we want to go and get where we are.
100%.
So, yeah, I mean, that's cool, though. I think that's great that Sean had that big of an impact on you. You know, I mean,
Yeah.
because, I mean, if you remember Sean back then, he didn't, most of half the time, he didn't even make the starting dress list, you know,
No.
and
No.
yet
No.
he still had a passion to play.
Yeah.
You know, he still had a
Yeah.
passion to be involved in the game. Which is why, you know,
Sure.
like I said, you know, and he was our one of the fighters we had, and so, you know, I mean, that probably is what drew him or helped him stay in shape to go on to do some MMA stuff, and being in the game, obviously giving back now as a coach. I mean, and
Sure.
I'm sure you probably had an impact on him as well. So I don't think it's a one-way street there. Now, let me ask you, when you played into the second year, did it get any easier or was it more challenging?
I think easier in a sense of you've adjusted to the lifestyle a little bit differently, a little bit more, right? So I think you have a better idea of what to expect, and would like to think that you're less apt to be rattled by a situation. You realize how long the season is, and you can turn it around from game to game, which I guess, a goaltender in specific has to be able to do anyways. But and then I think it was refreshing that it was kind of a different team, a different mentality, and a different coach at the time, right? It was just kind of, it was almost a fresh start because, in no sort of, negative way toward Toledo, but that wasn't where I wanted to be personally at that time. I wanted to take the next step up and play in the NA or whatever the case might have been elsewhere. But then falling back and knowing that at the time Scott Searing was like, we're still going to make that happen for you. Just, get down here, play your game, do your thing. It was definitely refreshing, So, it ended up, being an all year situation, which is totally fine because that still worked out. That still led to an opportunity at the next level. So, it was, it still had its challenges, but I would say nothing in comparison to year one. Year one was kind of a life altering wake up call, were you made to play hockey at the next level situation?
Let's talk about that. I mean, especially in juniors, not only in whether it be 1 year or two, but regardless of how long you play, because you have a lot of time usually to whether it be while you're working out, while you're, you know, at home on a day off, there's a lot more time for you to think. I think in juniors than there is like when you're in high school or if you're carrying a full-time college schedule, et cetera, et cetera. But even in the
Sure.
college level too, you get a lot more time to yourself. And obviously, as being where you're billeting and you're not at home, it gives you more pause to think about not only the game but about life. How much of that did it wear on you as far as what am I doing here playing at this level? Should I be at a higher level? Should I mean, am I good enough to be able to make that jump? I mean, all these thoughts go through your head. How much of that was the case when it came to you and goaltending and playing at that and playing away from home?
I would attribute a lot of that to it. I think for me personally, being away from home, that never was a factor. considering I moved 13 and a half hours out to Charlotte, North Carolina, or to out to Boston at the time, and then Charlotte, North Carolina, which is even further. But so that never bothered me. But you're right. I mean, you have a lot of time to yourself, and it definitely weighs on you when times are tough, right? I mean, when things are going great, being by yourself might be the best thing for you, kind of clear your mind and relax. But when they're tough and you got a lot of things going on and you're a young kid still trying to figure it out, it weighs on you. And I think that adds to maybe why year two was better, mentally and on the ice, was I kind of learned how to balance that day, right? So a lot of kids may be able to afford just kind of live in the junior lifestyle by itself, but I still had work. I had to balance work. So at the time, I was just flipping burgers at the local Steak and Shake, over in Toledo there. So I would go there, I'd start my day at 7 a.m., make breakfast for a couple of regulars, hang out through the lunch, like crazy lunch rush. And then honestly, I would change on the road, go over, walk into the ice house, get through practice, go over, work out, and then come home starving and know, you know what, I probably shouldn't stay up that late playing video games or whatever it is that, college kids or junior kids do, because I've got to work again at 7 in the morning. So I think having all of that helped a ton. You balance your day, you kind of learn up, I guess maturing in a sense, kind of learning how to be an adult, because that's what we have to do now, I would attribute a lot of that downtime and mental struggle to, maybe some of the difficulties I had my first year in juniors.
Okay. So, I mean, this isn't, now don't take this the wrong way. This isn't a try to bury one person over the other. No. I want this to be in terms of different styles, or what type of adjustments did you have to make in playing for both coaches? Was there a big difference in the way you had to prepare, the way the systems you had to be aware of, anything like that, playing under one coach versus the other?
I think the beautiful thing about goaltending is if you keep the puck out of the net, no matter who your coach is, he's going to be happy. And if you suck at keeping the puck out of the net, guess what? He's not going to be happy.
Yeah, they're awesome.
So I would say that definitely played a lot into my year one versus year two scenario, because I stopped the puck more in year two. But it definitely a difference in coaching style. System wise, you're a goalie, it doesn't change a whole lot. But coaching style wise, I wouldn't say I needed to be, a guy that was coddled or anything like that. But I would say I was more comfortable with maybe like a personable coach. And if you just look at X's and O's, A versus B, Scott Searing was more personable, at least to me. So whereas Dunk, maybe a little bit more demanding, just here it is, go do it. And for my sense, unfortunately, I didn't do it. I didn't stop the puck a lot for Ducks. So that was really the biggest difference between those two, right? And I mentioned my high school coach too. I think he was very personable. So it was kind of a comforting thing when Scott came in. It was like, okay, like I see a lot of similarities there to this guy I liked a couple years back, right?
Okay. Now, did I mean, but I guess I would say it, I think probably a mixture of the two probably helped you though in the end. Because yeah, Scott was had more of a person, the personality type coach, but Dunk was the guy that he knew how to push you and get the most out of you.
Sure.
So I think
Yeah.
that's a real good thing for both of them. And I'm a big fan of both Dunk and Scott. I really love them both. To this day, I still keep in touch with both of them. So I think the world of both of them. And Tarsh too. I love Tarsh. He's a crazy goofball who, well, he never stopped being a crazy goofball. It's just that on game days he was intense. You were kind of going, okay, fine. But that's
Yeah.
Tarsh for you. But anyway,
Right.
so unless you got him at home, by his drum kit. Then he had the biggest man crush on the late great Neil Peart from Rush, the band Rush. He
There you
would,
go.
yeah, he, I mean, oh yeah, he knew every Rush song there was to know and knew how to play it exactly like Neil Peart did. And he would practice on that thing forever. I remember Ryan Sexsmith when he was in Toledo. He stayed with Tarsh, and Tarsh would get up before work at like 5 in the morning and start playing his drum kit and going nuts.
Oh man, that's
Just to,
exactly what you want at 5 in the morning, right?
yeah, that's what he would do to get Ryan Sexsmith. He'd get him all wound up, waking him up at 5 in the morning. Oh, it's great. But anyway, so
Man.
you played now that second year. Was it still Boots and you, or was there somebody else with you that second year?
I just can't remember. I was thinking about that. I don't think it was Boots, maybe at the start of the year, but I think by the time that we went to Peoria for playoffs, it was just myself and Lauren Shotwell.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about
Lauren
him.
Shotwell.
The shot. Yep. Oh man. Oh my goodness. That's funny. Just thinking
There
about
was
that.
somebody in there most of the year. I can see it again. I can see his equipment. I can't remember a name, but he was there for most of the year, and then not at the end of the year, I don't believe. And he was a Detroit guy.
That wasn't Zach Meulen. Oh gosh, man.
That
I'm
was it. No, that was
wasn't.
it. That was it. Meulen.
Okay.
It was Zach Meulen.
Oh man. Like I
And that's
said.
it's funny. I told you I could see his equipment because I couldn't stand the mask he wore. So I remember the helmet that he had. But yeah, it was Zach Meulen.
Oh man, don't ask me how I was able to pull that one out of my rear end, because
You really did. That was incredible. You just pulled that name. You've got so many names just floating around up there. That was incredible.
well, I retired from doing play-by-play back in 2016-17, and I did 20 years, so that's why I tell them, I'm like, I retired. I told them because I aged out, 20 years.
Ha.
So, but it's like all those names and number, they all run together. So you just kind of
Oh,
pull
it's
out.
incredible.
You put. I mean, the only year, honestly, the only two teams, and really only the one team I remember is the national championship team, and that's because
Sure.
not only because they won it, but because I actually went on the road, flew out to Simi Valley, California, to broadcast the championship game back to Toledo on radio. And
Nice.
so all those guys, plus you always had that banner hanging up there and you always see them names, so you remember a lot of them. But I mean, there's
Sure.
a but I mean, some of my favorite players had absolutely nothing to do with that team. I mean, and I
Right.
love those guys. Those guys are like brothers to me. But I'm just saying, as far as they weren't the only team, that was a great team, and that who had people in there who I loved and just thought the absolute world of, current company included. Just the idea that there were some wonderful players that came out there and got the job done. They worked their butts off to get where they got. And whether it was on the ice or off later on in life, I'm just so proud of all the guys that did what they did. So that's why I'm doing this, just to kind of, I don't want
Sure.
you guys to be, as I've said many times before, I don't want you guys to be just some number in an old program that somebody's going to throw away. You guys got a voice. You guys paved the way for the teams that are playing now and the success that is now. And I want them to know that you guys were somebody, and that you guys went down that road, and that you guys have stories to tell, and that's the whole purpose of this. Now, speaking of stories, I want to hear some stories about your time in Toledo. I mean, like, who was talk about some of the best practical jokers, or who are some of the funnier guys, or if you were ever a victim of a prank, or if you prank somebody, that kind of stuff.
Man, you know what? You've got me beat. Maybe I'm not the best candidate for it, but I just don't have a whole lot of stories from that sense. Honestly, from a prank standpoint, it was always Mo. It's always equipment guy Mo. But old Jay Fravor, I mean, he's the best. I saw him a couple years ago when where was he, when we were playing the Cleveland Monsters. So he drove over when you guys were in town. But I mean, from yeah, other than that, I don't have a whole lot for you.
Well, I mean, who would you say probably besides Mo? I mean, now did you have to go through rookie dinner? Or
Yeah, I think I had to wear a I think I had to wear a female dress actually. Yeah. I did for sure.
Okay,
Yeah.
so
We all did. All the rookies had to wear a female dress that year.
yeah, because you
I do
take out
recall
the
that.
you got to take the vets out to dinner. Do you remember where you went to
Yeah.
dinner at? Like
Oh,
Applebee's or
nope. No. It might have been something like that, TGI Fridays or Applebee's, the back corner or something.
yeah,
But that was a while back. Whoo, you're
yeah.
testing me.
Yeah, now I mean usually now did you get shoe checked?
Oh man, I think I avoided it for the most part because you pick up onto that one real quick.
Yeah.
But I know a bunch of us have been shoe checked before. You get up and I think Twinkle Twinkle Little Star was a fan favorite.
Oh Lord. Oh gosh. It's gotten to the point now where people want like full-blown country songs or songs from musicals. I mean, it's gotten
Oh,
crazy now. But anywho,
unbelievable.
yeah. So, were you ever like a victim of a leaner, where they fill up the?
No, but that's definitely come into play the last couple of years in my stays in hotels and in pro hockey. But I think the spot that was a good spot for leaners was when we stayed. Oh, the hotel was right out front of the ice rink. Was that
Pittsburgh?
wasn't Cleveland, was it? It was Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I
But you
know.
pull into the right, and then we were yeah, I think it was Pittsburgh. Outside rooms, that was a great spot for leaners.
Ah, man, there were some doozies. Well, Cleveland also had that too. We were right across the parking lot from Hoover Ice Arena. I was called it the ice arena that sucks.
I remember
But
how bad that ice arena was when we walked into St. Louis my first year.
oh, Afton.
Their ice was awful. You couldn't see any of the lines when we played a game against them, and it didn't help that they were unbelievable that year.
Of
So you're
course.
just holding on for dear life for 60 minutes. You can't tell what's onside, offside, what's an icing. The ref's dropping the puck half the time. He's in the middle of the slot because he doesn't know where the dot's at. That barn was really nice. Yeah, they did a good job with everything there.
Well, the thing is that I mean, they were just that good. And it wasn't just
They
that
were
year.
good.
Back then, it was every year they were that good.
Yeah.
And you were only just a couple years removed from guys like Paul and Jan Stastny, that played for them. What's his name? Chris Butler. Those are all guys that went into the NHL. Brandon Bolig. Those were all future NHLers.
I think we had a pair of brothers when we played against them that might have been like a captain and assistant captain or something. I remember they were really good. And I just like their entire defense, they were so tall, all of them. We just go in there and you're like, oh, perfect, great. There's the one small guy. You're like, oh, how tall is he? Oh, 6'3". Oh, perfect.
The little guy, we'll call him Shorty.
Yeah,
Oh
right.
man. But now, so you finished playing in Toledo. Tell me how when you finished that second year, was there any kind of like thought as to what's next or what ended up steering you towards Pittsburgh State?
So after that second year, I was kind of, I wouldn't say over junior hockey, but ready to move on. You know, it had already been 2 years off of taking any courses in school. So, we went to a camp or not a camp, a tournament in Detroit that year, and somehow Fitchburg State, Massachusetts sent a guy out there. And That game actually that he was there to scout me, there was a Zamboni issue right in front of my crease, and we waited like 3 hours to start that game.
Oh my
I'll
God.
never forget that. And so sure enough, he stuck around, and I was incredibly average at best that game too. And afterwards, like, we really see, your movement. It looks great. I'm like, were you watching the same game I was just a part of? Like, I blew it. You're blowing it. And sure enough, like, they had me out there later in the year. So we visited the campus, and yeah, I just decided, I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm not gonna gamble and try to play one more year of juniors, whether it's Toledo or elsewhere, and maybe have another offer or maybe get hurt and not have any offers. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just go out to school, and it worked out pretty well. So I think I was pretty set in stone after year two.
And I remember that when that happened with Zamboni, didn't it get stuck when it was trying to
Yes.
resurface? The apparatus that floods the ice got stuck in the down position, so
Correct.
a bunch of hot
Yeah.
water went right
Yeah.
onto the rink and melted the ice down to the concrete.
Yeah,
Oh my God.
sizzle the hole all the way down to the concrete, like maybe 15 feet in from the Zamboni doors.
Yep.
And we're just standing there. That might have been like game one or two of the tournament too.
Of the
So
tournament.
there was a game going on the other side on the other sheet. They finished that, and then they're all like looking over, going like, what's going on? That game's not done. And we're like, we haven't started, man. Like, we're still in our gear.
Oh
I've been
my
walking around in my equipment for an hour and a half, 2 hours. I'm starving,
Yeah.
like.
Those were the best. See, that's just those are the stories I love, is talking about those because
Yeah.
I mean, that one, it just like went and there was just no turning
Oh
back.
yeah.
And they had to limp that thing
No.
into the doorway, into the Zamboni entrance. Oh my God, was that funny. Because
No,
that
it was right in
happened.
front of the locker room that we had.
Yep. And I didn't know what to do, so I was just like, oh crap, I'm not going on the air, not with this. And I just laughed my
Right.
butt silly because that happened in Toledo also. Not that, not where it burned it or melted it down to the concrete, but
Yeah.
where they were resurfacing. It was like in the first intermission, and they're resurfacing, and they're going from the Zamboni entrance. They go all the way down the ice. They're swinging it around to come back, and the Zamboni literally one of the front wheels, it literally rusted off right then.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so they had to stop. And so they and all of them were there, Sapp and Donnie Manders and all those guys that were part of the Ice House. This was before they came on as being part of the Cherokee officially. Anyway, they the late great Sapp, man, I miss him to this day. Anyway, they went out there and put a big metal bar, and they tapped it into that steering column. And lift up that right end, that right front end where the wheel's supposed to be, and they had to hold on to it like that and limp it all the way down the ice till they got back to the
Oh
back,
no.
the Zamboni entrance. I'm on the air trying to describe this because I had time to kill. There was nothing to do, and I almost pee myself. I am like sitting there just laughing. Of course, it's no laughing matter if you're on the other end of it, but it's
Oh,
like
sure.
we're.
If you're the one trying to fix the
Yeah, then it's like this isn't funny. But looking at it years later, it's like I mean, it was hysterical. Just one of those only in junior hockey, it
Right.
though, yeah, so that's why when you brought that up about that meltdown, that literal meltdown in up in Motor City, oh my God, that was his hilarious. That was one of those that you can't make stories like that up. You can't.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. So let's talk about now you going to up to Massachusetts, up to New England.
Sure.
Was it kind of starting all over again with freshman year, coming out there as far as you got guys several years older than you that have been here and you're just this new kid coming in?
Yeah, I think a lot of similarities, right? To both like your experience in at least from a playing standpoint, like your experience in high school again and in Toledo, like just being younger than a majority of the team. And they're close and they've been together for 3 years already, right? So a lot of similarities. And then if you look at it as a whole, not playing much freshman year at all, playing a little bit sophomore year, and then taking the reins and playing almost every game for 2 years is again very similar to my experience in high school. So it's kind of funny how it lined up.
I mean, were you at all like, did you ever give thought to the idea that, my family's not going to be able to see me play? Basically out here, well, I mean, you said before it didn't bother you being out on your own. But
Sure.
just the idea of, you're going to have to do a lot of do even more growing up at a pretty quick rate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's college in a nutshell, right? And that's you kind of have to figure it out on your own, and that's what it was out there for me. I think more of a striking change of pace was just Boston in general. The pace of life out east is so different from here in the Midwest. I went out there day two. I don't know anybody on campus, so I'm walking around. My parents dropped me off in a hurricane, so they got out of town, and I'm there. And in between the eye of the storm the next day, I'm like, oh, let's go walk around campus, right? Haven't been able to do that yet. So I'm walking around, and a few other students are doing the same, and I'm like, hey, how you doing? I'm Ryan. Hey, hi, I'm Ryan. And one kid just looks at me, dude, shut up. And I'm like, okay, so life's a little different here. Like, even Toledo in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you can pretty much strike up a conversation with anybody at the store if you want, and everybody's friendly. Out east, people have got their own agenda. They're doing their own thing. So that's where I got my first real nice pair of Beats headphones. Learned real quick. Just put your headphones in, put your head down, and do what you're doing.
Good night. Oh, that's funny. No, I mean, I guess, but you never really lose that Midwest in you,
No.
even though you're in places like Beantown and et cetera. Did you how long did it take you to assimilate to that whole scene up there in New England?
I'd like to think pretty quickly. I mean, and I say that jokingly. It's kind of the truth, but say that jokingly.
No, there ain't
But
no, there ain't no, there ain't no, that's true.
it is. It's just a different mentality. But I love it out there. I mean, the second that you're on board with a group of people, friends, family, whatever, everybody takes you in. They take care of you. So I do love it out there. But I would say you figure it out pretty quick. I mean, it was kind of almost that. That daily schedule you were talking about, where we touched on earlier, not a lot of downtime when you're a college athlete. You've got a full class schedule, and then you're off to practice, and then at some point, either during the day or after practice, you're finding a way to go maybe get to the rec center gym. Now almost every athletic team across the board's got a strength facility, which is obviously my neck of the woods as a strength conditioning coach, but so now today's college athlete is also probably got, strength conditioning set up after practices. So, I mean, it's a full schedule, and then you've got to find time to study whenever that might be. So, from that sense, I think you said you learn on the fly and you figure it out pretty darn quick. And you know what? If you don't figure it out pretty darn quick, you're not going to do well in your courses. So you're not going to last.
Yeah, that's true. But now, I would think that, especially with the schedule, the hockey schedule. I mean, I was gonna say that might be a little bit also crazy, but I would think also that it probably was also kind of a benefit too. It was kind of a little easier. Because usually in college you play Friday, Saturday. And even if you played any other day, it's usually Sunday. So, I mean, the idea being that, most I'm not saying all, but a lot of college classes usually roll Monday through Thursday. You know, that's why you usually see the college ID nights on Thursday nights, because they know that those kids can sleep it off till Friday morning. But what for you, I mean, what was it like being traveling college-wise to other schools and stuff to play other teams? How was there any difference in the way that you rolled back then, or was it just kind of like junior?
A lot of similarities. I think the bus trips in Toledo were longer just because the conference that I played in college was fairly small. Our longest bus trip to an in-conference school was like 2 hours and 25 minutes with traffic. Just because they were all within Massachusetts. It was Massachusetts State Athletic Conference. So, from that sense, travel was easy. However, playing at that level and in some of the rinks that we played at, they were smaller than NHL size, like the surface. So, one of my biggest difficulties from a playing standpoint was if you were playing a couple of those schools and you knew that, there's no morning skate. It's not like a pro schedule or maybe that second day of a junior schedule. You don't get the morning skate, so you don't get to skate on the small ice. You're just hopping out there with college kids where college D3 hockey is north, south, 100 million miles an hour, hit everything that moves. Thank goodness we have full cages on instead of visors, right? So you're going in, jumping into that game as a goalie, and your first shot is from the blue line, but that's actually only 50 feet away, right? So it's a quicker game, and like I said, you get your quick warm up, and that's it. You know, there's no morning skates. You don't get to adapt. So it is, from a hockey standpoint, that was different.
Oh, that's so. Now, so you go 4 years there. Did you feel any kind of, I don't know, like, I won't say depression, but I mean, just kind of like bummed at the idea when you finished and you played your last game in college? Like, did you think, wow, that's it? Is this over?
100%. Yeah, 100%. No doubt about it. That was the worst. You know, and the way it ended too, it was a pretty tough game. So it's just, yeah, 100%. That was a bummer. The idea of trying to chase the pro dream and play professional hockey, I mean, it was there, but you know, I was already 24 years old when I graduated from college, and I'm like, you know what, do I got to make a decision as like a young adult. I said, do I want to try and chase this dream, play in the SPHL, maybe sneak into the East Coast if I'm absolutely blessed? That's the highest level I get to play. Is that worth it? Because that might take 3 years as a goalie. There's only one net. NHL teams have prospects. It trickles all the way down. I know this for sure now that I've been working in the AHL. I said, you know, is that something I wanted to do? Do I want to spend 3 years of grinding it out for one or two chances? I don't know. And so I made a decision. I said, let's take this internship and let's not do that. So it worked out really well for me. But you know, I would never tell somebody else not to take the leap at trying either, you know. So it worked out well for me. We'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, so how did you end up catching on with an AHL team in Charlotte?
So okay, yeah. They said, you know, I'm a strength conditioning coach now. I would say my passion for that started way back with, you know, Sean Serapilia and the 24-hour gym that we had access to in Toledo. But when I went to school out east in Boston, I majored in exercise science. Wasn't really sure what that meant at the time. Thankfully, the advisors kind of sent me down that path. First couple classes are about human movement and the science of the body, and I'm going like, you know what, I like this. This makes sense to me. And then another person who I didn't mention to you earlier from Toledo, Ryan Richmond,
I was just thinking
was
about him.
actually he's a strength and conditioning coach. Yep.
I just went through my
And
mind when
so,
you were talking about it.
correct. And so he's a strength conditioning coach, and I'd be lying to all of us if I didn't say that, started following him on Instagram and going like, this is awesome. This is definitely what I want to do, right? And from day one, it was part of what recruited me out to Fitchburg State. But there was actually a goalie, it would have been 6 years before me, that came in, had a very similar experience, worked for the guy I worked for after graduating, and he's now actually the head of science and strength conditioning for the Arizona Coyotes. So there's a lot of connections, just like any job, but networking in pro sports is out of control. And I was lucky enough to have some connections after graduating, and that led to an opportunity with Carolina and Charlotte. So
Okay, so I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about them for a little bit in that, well, let's see, while you were there with that, trying to think, was it in college or was it with your Carolina that you met your gal pal?
Well, funny story there. She's out, but it
Okay.
was at Fitchburg State. Yep.
Okay, well
So,
then I won't
yep.
talk, but that's all we need to know.
No, you're good.
All right, so then, but the other thing is that you guys won a championship, the Calder Cup.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And it was a lot of fun to do, and it helps you figure out what things work with a team and what things don't from a training standpoint. And never would I sit and take credit. I mean, it's the players. They're, you've got some real good teams, you've got some bad teams, and that doesn't dictate how you are as a coach. But it definitely, everybody pulled on that thing, and that team was unbelievable. If you look up the roster, that team's going to go down as one of the best. I'd argue, if not the best American Hockey League team that's ever been put together. So they were really good, and it was a lot of fun just a couple years ago too.
Yep. And now, did you get a day with the cup, or is that, do they do that in the NHL?
They do that. Mine was complicated because I was home in Grand Rapids for a little bit, and then I went back to Charlotte, and we couldn't keep track of where the cup was at. Long story short, it was in town, I think, the week or week and a half before we opened up the next season. I'm going, I need to grab this thing and have a day with it before the season officially starts. Any hockey player knows you can't do that after the next season started, right? Like, from a superstition standpoint. So I grabbed it on a w random Wednesday, and well, the rest of that night was a blur. We'll go with that.
Wow.
So called up a couple buddies, said, hey, I have the Calder Cup. You guys want to do something? And one buddy goes, I don't work on Wednesday, so I'll already pick up the drinks. Where are we headed?
Oh my gosh.
So
Yeah.
that was great. That was great.
Yeah. So I take it you spent the rest of the night drinking out of the cup.
Are you drinking, eating? Yeah.
Whatever you
Falling
could out
into the
of the
pool. Yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
cup. Oh my goodness. But yeah, I mean, a lot of guys don't get that opportunity very often. So the fact that you were able to, get a ring doing what you love, I mean, my gosh, there can't be a better feeling in the world.
No, it was incredible. And you know what, we kind of talked earlier about maybe taking things for granted when you're in the moment, but it was one of those things where we kind of realized that the team was really good and had a shot at it, with a couple months left in the season. So it was one of those savor every moment situations. And the playoff run was incredible. I mean, I'm getting excited just talking about it, right? It was awesome. And a lot of that staff isn't a part of the organization anymore. Very few players are still there. They're littered throughout the National Hockey League, a couple guys in Europe and a few in the American League still, but there's been a lot of success that's stemmed from that team all over. And it's you make friends that you could call and talk to today, tomorrow. You know, and that's the best part about any team that wins. You know that from that Toledo team. So it's a lot of fun.
The more I think about it too, we talked in the outset of this about the disappointments, in high school, Granville, with Toledo, that first season especially. The little bit of the disappointment in college. The more I think about it, those little roadblocks, we'll call them, or whatever, disappointment blocks, built, they were the foundation for what built for you and your teammates to reach the Holy Grail with at the AHL level, which is the Calder Cup. You got a ring, Ryan. Like I said, we talked about Mo. I want so desperately for him to get a national championship with Toledo, and that's what we're rooting for. And they got to nationals last season, but he's still in the chase for one. So that's what I'm saying. You can't, people don't realize how important and how hard it is to get one of those things. I mean, I got mine, I got to be celebrate and be part of a championship team in my second year with the team. And we went the year before, we were in the national championship game and lost. And a couple times after that, we went to nationals right after that. And I'm thinking, we're going national championship all the time. And then we hit a dry spot and it was like, wait a minute. And it's, I thought we
Right.
always went to na No, it is incredibly hard. Incredibly
Right.
hard to get to that
Yeah.
point, let alone win it, just to get there.
Yep.
And that's what I'm saying. All those disappointments you had early on, I think were a setup for you to achieve something that great. And I,
Yeah.
we can talk about all the different little disappointments, but to me, those are what build your character, and they build it and
Right.
build it and build it. And I think the fact that like I said, you got to get a day with the cup, you got a ring. I think that is the payoff for going through what you went through early on.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I like the way you put it, and I don't disagree. I mean, setbacks, obstacles, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I think that there's a reason why I never really, in my playing career, played for a lot of, winning teams. Not that it didn't have a winning culture or the proper type of culture that can win, but I think it a lot of times it showed you things you don't want to do too, which is, from a learning standpoint, just as important, if not more important. So, I think you're right. I mean, I think I've been fortunate enough in my 4 years in professional hockey that we have won a lot, but I think it translates, right? I think you figure out what things work and don't work, and people always ask me whether it's in interviews for positions in pro hockey or what. But always ask me, what draws you to hockey, and I kind of struggle with that answer because it seems like common sense to me. So it's hard for me to put into words, but it's like, well, the culture of being in the locker, it just makes sense to me. I've lived it my whole life, right? So, what draws me to the hockey locker room? Well, nothing. That's where I'm comfortable.
That's
It's
home.
almost easy for me, right? That's just another day at the office, right? It's the best office in the world. We know that. So, that's one of those things that, like I said, I do struggle to put into words because it's natural. It's something I've been around, and I think you're right. I think hardships and setbacks and obstacles all happen for a reason, right?
And you got to experience the other end of it, though. That's the good thing. That's what I'm proud of you for that.
Right.
So, well, before we wind her
I
up,
appreciate that.
just a couple of things before we wind her up. Number one, what would the Ryan of today, what would the Sox of today, what advice would you give that 18-year-old kid that was suiting it up back then?
I I'd give him a little tough love first off, which maybe Coach Ian Duncan tried to do, but I'd tell the kid to stop the puck one or two more times. But no, from a advice standpoint, I probably wouldn't change a whole lot. Maybe that's a cliche answer, but I wouldn't. I think I had struggles and whatnot that I had to go to and or go through, and anybody does, but they shaped me, whether I want to admit it or not. But I mean, they did. So I wouldn't change much. It's made sense. It's worked out, and I guess that'd be my advice, is kind of hang tight. Maybe don't take things for granted as you're going through it here and there, but I wouldn't change a whole lot.
Fair enough. And lastly, what would you like to say to Cherokee Nation as far as, if there's anything you'd like to say to them at all? That's alumni,
I just
coaches,
said,
fans, the whole nine yards.
I just I commend you on creating a great great family as an entire whole, players, coaches, fans, family, whatever. Everybody plays a part, and they said, I know there's a lot of kids that come in at an age where there's a lot of uncertainty, and myself included. You have to learn these things on your own, but without a great base from everybody involved in Cherokee, learning those things was a lot more difficult. So, from that sense, I say thanks and keep it up, right?
Nothing wrong with that. Well, Ryan, I appreciate you doing this, man. It's been fun catching up with you. I hope we stay in touch. And hey, best of luck here as you move forward here with everything you're doing.
Perfect. All right. Hey, thank you very much for your time, Mick, and I appreciate it. I'm glad you chose me to come on.
Well, thank you very much. Well, that's episode 88 of the Cherokee Rewind with Ryan Wysocki. Thanks so much to him for joining us. Don't forget, you can subscribe by subscribing. Go to whatever platform you use to consume your MP3s and just click put in Cherokee Rewind and subscribe. Anyway, be sure to do that. And every time a new episode drops, it'll let you know. So for Ryan Wysocki, I am Mick saying thanks a lot. And we'll catch you next time right here on the Cherokee Rewind.